Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Our guest now, Paul Handley, editor of the Church Times newspaper in Britain. Paul, welcome to Sunday Night once again.
Thank you very much.
The public civics lesson continues at on the steps of St. Paul's, even though lessons coming from the United States would indicate that perhaps it's going to crank up a notch or two.
Yes, it's difficult to know from day to day what is going to be happening. We've seen the American police get heavy with the Occupy protests in Wall Street and elsewhere in the States. There's been a fair amount of gung-ho support for that approach in various bits of the press in this country. And the City of London, which owns half the land or half owns the land, it's never very clear, in front of St. Paul's, has said, well, you've had your 2 weeks consultation period, we're not going anywhere, we now want to clear the highway, and so there's legal proceedings, which puts the onus back on the cathedral chapter, and they have played a very straight bat. They say that the resolution must be peaceful, they recognise the city's right to act against the protesters, and that's about it, really. I think it's a slight disappointment that they haven't been more supportive of the protesters since they've been engaging in consultations with them.
Well, it was a very public contretemps, as the world knows, between two members of the chapter at St. Paul's Cathedral, the Dean and Giles Fraser. How is this going to play into the internal politics of the church, particularly St. Paul's?
I think there's still conservative elements and still more liberal elements involved. And that the church splits throughout. I mean, you'll get all who support bankers, get people who support the protesters. But every Church Times poll run over the last 3 or 4 weeks on the subject has been pretty overwhelmingly in favour of supporting the protesters, at least their right to protest and the right to stay and protest as long as they want.
How big a place is the Occupy movement, given that it's taken place at St. Paul's and the way it's caught up the whole area of St. Paul's and the people of St. Paul's? How big has this become as a factor in the public argument that underpins the Occupy movement about the whole role of the bankers and the GFC and all of that? Has it had a magnifying effect on that debate in the British public?
Certainly. I mean, it is the blue touch paper for a debate which both sides, well, the church as well, have said has been going on for some time. I mean, we've still got a fairly active Labour Party in this country, so you'd think support for the financial structures would have been ambivalent up until now. But no, the protesters have said, well, come on, you've been debating it, and yet we still have basically public-owned banks awarding themselves huge dividends, huge profits, huge salaries. We don't see anything changing. And one of the things that St. Paul's has done is ask the financial world what they think of their own behaviour, and a fair proportion of them admit that the city is less ethical than it was before deregulation. But it's very early days for a proper debate about morals and ethics, and we really need to see the government taking a position in this now.
Well, a continuing lesson in public civics that the whole world continues to watch. Paul Handley, let's move on to a wider debate going on in Britain about religious freedom in general, Christian freedom in particular. This one has created quite a stir, and it continues to unfold.
Yes, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've had an increasing number of very isolated individual cases, employees largely, public employees, who've been reprimanded for speaking about Christianity out of place, supposedly. There was an airline attendant who wore a cross and was supposed not to. There's been nurses who've worn crosses. There have been social workers who've refused to engage in support for gay relationships, that sort of thing. And although these have all been isolated cases, and there are pros and cons in many of them, brought all together, and together with a certain public querulousness these days about anything religious, a significant number of people in the church in this country think that this is a secularist movement where very soon it'll be difficult to hold a minority Christian opinion on anything. So we've had a public inquiry, about 2 or 3 hearings now, and there'll be a report in the new year. This week we had representations from the Church of England, the Roman Catholic Church, Methodist Church, and so on. are expressing disquiet, but maybe not alarm yet. Part of the problem is that a lot of the people who object want to be objectionable. This is the old right to free speech, which tends to be tested when the free speech is about something controversial or discriminatory.
And I guess this is one of those issues where it's an invitation to those who wish to push from the extremes of both sides can have a go. That is, those who want to create a far more secular public space will argue about people with religious opinions being able to express them in terms of action in public, and those arguing for the right of people to proselytise and do anything else they wish need to push back as hard as they can. So it really is an invitation to test this, which I guess comes along in a different guise every quarter century or so.
That's right. I think that's very wise. The people involved are on the fringes, I think, by and large. And then every now and again you come across a case which is a blatant stupidity. Various civic societies not mentioning the word Christmas anymore. There's been debate about the Church of England's place in the House of Lords at the moment. The Church of England still has 26 seats in the House of Lords. And in the reform that will come along one day, there's support from the Jewish community, from Muslims, saying we want the Church of England still to be there because that stops it being a secular state. So this fear of offending people, which I think is at the root of so much of this debate, is misplaced and born of religious ignorance rather than anything else.
Yes, and it's a debate that will continue in other guises. There is a very important element of what can in some minds be seen as religious prejudice, others, those who see justice as at last being done, and that is that the Catholic Church has been found liable for offences committed by priests. Now, this takes us into the whole area of the sexual abuse scandal, but it's most significant in other jurisdictions affected by British common law, in that there has been an argument run for many years by the Church, some say quite disingenuously and cynically, that the Church can't be held liable for the wrongs of individual priests because there is no employer-employee relationship. The priest has a private deal with God, of which the Church is merely the facilitator.
Yes, which in a different age one can imagine holding water. In an age when, certainly in the Church of England, the parish priest still has a fair amount of autonomy. But that really doesn't wash in the present day, and courts are indicating that priests are the responsibility of the organisation. They're appointed by bishops, they're ordained, and they represent the organisation. So it's a nonsense to then pretend that they are free agents. And certainly this has huge financial implications for the Roman Catholic Church, and as they're finding in the United States, that similarly the dioceses are liable for the crimes of various of their priests, and this is going to be a hugely costly development, I think.
As it's been handed down, the ruling applies to the Catholic Church. It was about a case regarding the Catholic Church, but clearly it will spill over across other denominations. What's the general feeling in the Anglican community about it?
Well, I think the Church of England saw the writing on the wall, not least because it's had a couple of minor judgments over employment rights. Priests who wanted to stay in parishes and take this court. And what that means is that the Church has to start behaving like an employer. So proper appointing procedures, proper supervision, proper disciplinary measures. And over the last 7 or 8 years, I think, there's been a huge number of dull but important debates and motions in the General Synod in this country to improve the lot of priests. And priests have... A number of them have been grumbling about it because it means they lose a certain amount of independence. But on the other hand, given that the Church is now liable for what they do, by and large, that's the way things have to go. I think it's important to say that the Roman Catholic Church is appealing against this judgment at present, so we still have to see how that plays. But certainly I think this is the way it's going to go.
Yes, and without labouring the point, it plays not just into this question of liability, but as you indicate, flows through into the whole area of employment relations and almost sort of industrial relations in the Church. That is, transparency of procedural justice with regard to priests. Those sorts of things will all be impacted by this down the trap.
Yes, but then I mean, it's rather like in this country we have planning regulations for buildings, and there's an exemption for the Church of England. because the Church of England system is seen to be at least as good, if not better, than the secular planning regs. So if you want to make any alteration, move an ancient painting or something in the church, you have to get a proper legal faculty. So similarly, you would expect a caring, loving organization like the church, it's very difficult to say these words without putting a fancy colour around them, to have exemplary employment care, the proper procedures. And yet, many people in the secular world look at the way the church treats its priests and its other employees and is aghast sometimes at what's allowed to drag on or the problems that priests are left to handle on their own. So I think the danger is that the layer of bureaucracy that will have to be paid for somehow, but the advantage is that our important priests are looked after properly.
Well, finally today, Paul Handley, as the year begins to draw to its conclusion, a year of celebration is drawing to its high point. This year, the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible was celebrated in London this week with a service at the Abbey, and the Archbishop of Canterbury spoke in the presence of royalty.
It has been an extraordinary year. We've had an astonishing number of events of very high quality, drama and television series and radio programs, readings and exhibitions and so on. It's been quite remarkable, the affection that has come out from this Bible that so many churches ignore completely. And many people, a common phrase as well, of course I'm not religious, but I've grown up with Bible, it's shaped my language.
Richard Dawkins included.
Oh, golly, yes. And Philip Pullman and various others campaigned to get religion out of public life, nonetheless acknowledge the beauty of the translation. And that's rather what Rowan Williams was saying to the Queen, who she obviously knows all this, and others as well. The beauty doesn't necessarily equate with simplicity. That the translation doesn't necessarily have to be immediately apparent and easy, because, after all, it's a complicated theological treatise, the Bible. And indeed, one of the things that the 1611 translators produced was a translation with lots of monosyllables. So they were making the language as easy as they could, but they were also a terribly erudite bunch and would be astonished at how little we can cope with sometimes. So the point about the King James Bible, as so many of the events this year have been oral ones, so it's a spoken Bible, and we've heard it spoken on the radio and on television and in the theatre, and that's been tremendous.
A creed occur against dumbing down. Paul Handley, it's probably an appropriate note to finish this erudite discussion. Thank you so much for joining us once again.
It's been a pleasure.
Paul Handley, editor of the Church Times in London, on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.